G'day guys, this is Matt from the Australian Tactical Medical Association. Welcome back to our podcast. Today we're going to be continuing on with our series from the Australian Tactical Medicine Conference 2018, which we held up in Brisbane a few weeks ago. Today we are going to be hearing a presentation from the second day of the conference from Dustin Osborne. Dustin's a senior constable with the Queensland Police and has also been an integral part of the integration of tactical first aid into their active armed defender program. He's talking about the tactical first aid program that they've had up there, some of the successes they've had and the challenges that they've overcome, which is highly relevant to what APMA's been pushing on the front of police medics and tactical first aid for all responders. Hope you enjoy this one, and we'll get the presentation out to you so you can have a look at the slides as well.
Next up, we've got Senior Constable Dustin Osborne. He's a Senior Constable in the Queensland Police. Got a fairly lengthy thing here, but I think it's important that I'll read it out. It really sets the scene for the rest of his presentation. Dustin joined the Queensland Police Force in 2008 and has since been attached to the Fortitude Valley Police Station as a General Duties Officer. He also operates in various specialist roles and units. In 2016, Dustin was selected to form part of the Active Armed Offender Project Team, which was responsible for developing and implementing skills and tactics, training packages specific to that project team incident resolution solutions. During creation of the team, Dustin became a great advocate for casualties and these horrific events and developed a module dedicated to medical response, which was successfully integrated into the AAO curriculum. After the successful implementation of the project, Dustin continued to strive to raise operational capabilities and the capacity of the Queensland Police to better protect and preserve life by developing and introducing tactical first aid training service-wide. As a result, all sworn officers now receive training and carry equipment necessary to stopping mass casualties and hemorrhage. And there's a whole range of other things that project has delivered, which is an amazing outcome. Today, Dustin's presentation is talking about stopping the killing and enabling the living. Dustin, welcome to the conference, and I invite you to address.
Ladies and gentlemen, thanks very much for having me and giving me the opportunity to speak on this matter. That's pretty well stolen my thunder. I don't need to speak much more on it, but this is what we've got here. So my presentation is on stopping the killing and enabling the living, okay? I'm trying to move away from stopping the killing and stopping the dying, okay? We want to have a complete package that allows people to move on and move better forward after these incidences. And we're trying to do that via rapid interventions and good quality care. So as we just rolled over here, in 2016, the Queensland Police Service announced the start of the Active Armed Defender Project. From here, operational skills took that over. We developed two forms of curriculum, the instructor's package and then the user package as well. From here, we ran 26 back-to-back five-day courses, creating over 540 instructors that went on throughout the state to actually present this data and this training package. From that, we had a huge amount of lessons learned. We delivered over 1,400 dynamic scenarios with simunition. We detonated over 260 IEDs. Not so many of them were detonated by officers, just for me to have a laugh in a lot of cases, but we got there in the end. And then from there, we looked at also presenting a one-hour session on man-down drills. It was the first time the police had been exposed to actually getting your mate out of a bad situation, to go in, to get them, and to pull them back out. This is for general duties police. This isn't a police tactical group. This is for the guys and the girls on the road doing the job every single day. This is specialist training that we're bringing in. And it's something that no one had seen before. The lessons that we learned from Active Armed Defender, from doing all those scenarios, what did we learn out of that? So the biggest thing that came out of it was that we've got a massive ethical responsibility to our service people and also our community as well, okay? In an Active Armed Defender incident, our role is to push forward. It's to resolve the incident, okay? We have to step over casualties. Many presentations before me have already stipulated that the resolve is the mission. We have to stop the offence happening. We have to stop casualties being made. And until we do that, our job's going to be exponentially harder. From there, though, what we needed to do was we needed to break the stall. What we found from doing over 1,400 scenarios, what we found from reviewing critical incidents of police shootings and even use of force measures, that we hit a wall. We were extremely good at presenting threats, exercising uses of force, but after we did that, we stood there and we waited. We didn't know what to do. What is that all about? Well, it's just we're not ambos, we're police, okay? We're good at pulling the trigger on tasers, on firearms, on capsicum spray, but that's it. We don't know what to do from there. So from there, we really threw in a really good term. Adam Cantrick's brought it out. We've got to give him credit for it. He loves the credit. And it's moving from use of force to use of care, okay? It was one of the biggest things that really hit a note within the QPS, especially when we're trying to promote this to management and things to bring it in. We can use a force, we can use a firearm, but what do we do then, okay? In my personal opinion, I'm speaking purely for myself, every police service comes out and say we shoot to stop the force, to stop the threat. In my opinion, we shoot to kill. You can't shoot someone in the thoracic cavity, in the cardiac cavity, and expect a good result. If we have the ability to go forward then and stop mass hemorrhaging from occurring, to start rendering aid to thoracic trauma, we actually can then say we're shooting to stop that threat, because we're actually then aiding people. So we need to get in there and help. What does that mean? It's a very hard topic. It's something that brings up a lot of questions, but that's the medicalisation of police. How far do we go? There's been a lot of questions, there's been a lot of discussion already. You know, do you give an ambo a gun, or do you teach police how to ambo? What do we do? Where do we actually go from here? And how far do we go? So from this, there was a lot of discussions held, and from this we had the birth of the Tactical First Aid Project. This kicked off in 2017, and you could see it's a really tight timeline. Okay, we didn't have a lot of time to work with it. From February, we got the directive to push forward and actually bring it out. We had to do curriculum research straight away. We had to get clinical governance by working with the trauma services unit at the Royal Brisbane Women's Hospital. Associate Professor Daryl Wall is a fantastic guy, provided huge amounts of assistance and assets to us to do this. We had to get really savvy really quickly with the Therapeutic Goods Administration Act and things like this, just massively outside of our wealth of knowledge that we already had. From March, we then pushed all the way through to producing what we're going to put in our IFACs, or our TFACs as we call them, right down to April to June, so basically 6-week mark, creating 400 instructors, which then pushed out to July 2017 to June 2018 to teach 12,000 officers tactical first aid. So we've gone from basically having 1 in 10 ratios type of thing of officers who are actually taught first aid, which is standard first aid, a bit of CPR, to having everyone trained and qualified in these core skills. So what is TFAT? What does it actually do? So the first thing it does is, in our first curriculum that we had, we taught people basic sort of anatomy, where things are, how things work, how much blood you've got in your body, how much blood is pumped per stroke, to give people an idea of severity of bleeds. Okay, we didn't know this before. We had to actually create that model. First off then, we brought in the AVPU consciousness scale. It's super simple, super quick to use. It's not bulky like the Glasgow Coma scale and things like that. We then decided that we were going to sort of bring in like a TC3 type of thing and actually use our MARCH acronym, okay? For Doctors ABC, it's a fantastic thing. It works in so many environments, except we wanted to have something separate, someone that showed you that it's important, someone that showed you that severity of it. So we went with the MARCH acronym. We know with Doctors ABC that the danger's there. We're being called there because there's danger, okay? Someone's spurting out blood, asking them to squeeze your hand and checking their name, it's probably not going to help anyone. So we would just get straight into it, just stop the hemorrhage, get an airway, and move forward with the rest of the assessment. The medical interventions that we've actually got available to us now are hemorrhage control techniques through the use of tourniquets, wound packing, and modular bandaging. And we are apply chest seals to open thoracic traumas. From there, every officer now is taught CPR regardless if they like it or not. And the last component of it is what we really want to help promote, which is the good quality handover to our advanced care providers, like our paramedics or definitive care centres. We're starting to understand that we are going to possibly do transports as well. So paramedics might not even be there. They might not get there. It's probably easier for us to chuck our partner in the car and go. So having the idea of how to hand over a casualty to our definitive care centres and our QAS is extremely important to us. Also helps when we are not working in a tactical situation as well. One of the big challenges for me for writing this curriculum was to come up with a skill set that would help us in an active armed offender situation, but then also help us at a car crash or a kid that's fallen off a playground. We still have core duties. We're 12,000 cops, approximately 5,000 of general duties, just doing everyday driving around, checking what's going on, and this is where we're at. So the equipment that's become available to us is the Soft TW, tourniquet is a tourniquet, you know, at the end of the day, it's sort of a Samsung Apple phone type of argument. I'm Apple, so that's why we got Soft Tees. The Elias bandage is just one of those fantastic all-in-one products, in my opinion. You know, quality 4-inch modular bandage, wound packing materials, occlusive bandages in it. The I-cup, pressure cup also works extremely well. And it also simplifies things and it makes things easy to teach. The last component is our high-fin compact chest seals. So for us and your basic coppers out there, having a symmetric chest seal works really well. Okay, it doesn't really matter which way they go on. You're always going to have a down vent. You're always going to have an up vent. And it makes things easy. We've got to work on the fact that we are teaching the lowest common denominator. We can't help some things. From there, we're moving into how we actually do our training. Working with a couple of companies from all over Australia, what we actually found out is that high fidelity training makes really, really good products. We've gone through the stress inoculation conversations. We don't need to have them again. But what we found is by having good quality training products and resources, it actually really brings in a good continuity and a good flow from going from that use of force to that use of care. We've got great results. There's a shooting just recently by police. And the first thing that we picked up is on the far right picture there, which is the torso of someone that seriously needs to do a better gym day. You could see, I don't know if this has got a laser pointer. Oh, yep. So this hole here, we've did some research, looked at some autopsies and worked out the 40 caliber hole is about that size. So that's what we gave them. So when we actually shoot someone, we know what we're looking for. And we've got that already indented into our mindset. This torso trainer has been changed a little bit. What we've got now is this injury side here has been brought down into that iliac region, okay, so we can do wound packing as well. Really basic type of tourniquet trainer. So our tourniquet trainer, it bleeds. Once you put the tourniquet on, probably it stops. So it gives you that, again, that good sense that you are putting something on. You go through that tactile experience of doing it. Again, we've had really good results with that. We've had a traumatic amputation of a motorbike rider, sort of lower leg, and the responding police officer to that said it was just like what I've been dealing with, and it wasn't a shock to me. I sort of knew what I was doing, and it was cool. When I tightened it up, the blood stopped and it turned off like the tap when we do it on the training. So we've got that continuity, we've got that flow going, and that's what we want. Then the very last part here, this photo here, a couple of cool dudes doing some pretty cool sim work. This just, again, starts putting things in a context to show how we actually move through and how we actually do our job. Combining curriculums was then one of the things that we had to look at. So we had a standalone product for active armed offender. We had a standalone product for tactical first aid. And we had to blend them together. Why are we blending them together? So we can break that stall. So we can actually keep that continuity going. So we can have use of force to use of care and keep moving through. One of the big things for that is we branched out and we spoke to a lot of external stakeholders. one of the best external stakeholders that we hit up with was Atma straight away. Pretty shameless plug for them, but that's what they do. They give us really good quality info that just lets us know exactly what's going on out there in the real world and how we can bring it back in. Internal stakeholder collaborations was working with our PTG group, so asking CERT, what would you do in this situation and how can we aid you? If we do an active armed offender incident, what small steps can we do to make your job easier? So we're trying to have that overall holistic approach and to work up to helping everyone out. We started to move away from single mechanisms of training. So we didn't want to have people going in saying, hey, we're going to train firearms now, so let's go pull your gun out, regardless of what you think, and you discharge that, or you present a taser or cap spray. So what we did is we started to build large-scale scenarios. People had to go in and they had to work out what they've got to do. They've actually got to go through the cognitive phases of selecting the best use of force and then applying it. From there, we went to also look at the scenarios to encompass the care phase. So in previous times past and in coronial recommendations that we've had, we were told we're very good at discharging firearms, we're good at tasering people and whatever else, and we can make those correct assumptions straight away. We know what we're doing and we do it right. The problem is police are the best dressed bystanders then, because we put everything away and we're like, we're done. You know, we don't know what to do. So by bringing in TFAT and then pushing it through to be part of our scenarios, police understand now that once they discharge their firearm, it's actually the start of the job. We've got a lot of work to do and we're just pushing on through it. We're doing it really well now. And the results, we are seeing them on the road. We're seeing improved casualty outcomes. We're seeing a lot less blood spilt based on the fact that we identify it and we just move straight into the use of care phase. One thing that was a little bit controversial, I think it was very, very beneficial though, was training to lose right there. A lot of people don't agree with it, okay, but the fact is police are going to get shot. Active armed offender statistics, sort of older statistics now, I'm assuming, but it was about 60% of the officer that went through the door first was the one that got shot. We've got an ethical and moral obligation to train that, to bring people's mindset into that. So if we train that you get shot and you're just like, oh, nah, I'm cool, I'm just going to push on, well, that's not realistic. So what we do is when we train to lose, we just train for a realistic scenario. We allow that officer to get shot. We allow them to start self-aid mechanisms. And we take that lose to a win and we push that mindset and we start building on a really good, comfortable scheme that something's going to happen. And something might happen, but we're going to get there. That was premature, but anyway, we're here now. This is our combined curriculums, and this is how we're moving now. This is also the new tactical first aid curriculum that we've brought in from this year. So what we've got is an active armed offender situation. There's some police here, basically getting ready to do a room entry or moving forward onto that, okay? From there, we're teaching officer down skills, okay? I've had a really bad day. I've been shot in the leg and the chest, but I'm doing self-aid on the tourniquet while my mate's dragging me out and getting me into it, okay? We just start, we just get it done. Being a champion, though, I've got back up and gone straight into casualty movements and then looking at casualty collection points as well. So what we're looking at here is how are police going to operate in hot environments, okay? We're going where no one else will go. And because we are GDs, we're there in numbers first. PTG groups, they'll get the call once we've got a CCP actually set up. They'll get the call later on going, hey, boys, you missed out on a wicked job. And then we'll tell them all about it. But and that's the reality of it. This is the reality of general duties policing. This might not even be an active armed offender. This might just be a domestic violence job that's gone really pear-shaped and is also realistic. It can be anything from a drunk guy at the train station who then puts on a massive act and causes a whole lot of issues. So this is what we do here. So we're going through. We know we can do self-aid. We know we can do buddy aid. We know how to start picking up casualties and actually moving them. We're starting to teach guys about CCPs. and getting general duties to think on that higher level of incident command and not just themselves or just that one little bubble that we're supposed to work in. Reportable data. So what have we actually got in the last 2 years that we can actually really look at and hold on to? So tactical first aid was brought in off the back of the Active Armed Defender project, but have we actually had an Active Armed Defender yet? Thankfully not. But what we've done is we've got all those skills, all those techniques, and we're utilising them all the way through our service. And this is that ethical and this is that moral decision that we've actually made to better our community. So mental health interventions are 50% of our TAC first aid usage. When we built this, we built it for Active Armed Defender, not to help mental health patients when they've self-harmed. We've had huge usages of it. We've had Far North Queensland, we've had mental health patients disembowel themselves and cut off large sections of their GI tract. I've had a mental health patient personally on myself slash their own throat. We've had really good response to it. In the mental health intervention state, we've had zero recorded deaths. We've been able to stop every single death from occurring. Violent altercations sit at about 35%. That one there is basically baddie on baddie and a very low two occasions of police applied force. In those, there's been one police applied force with a death occurring and also one sort of applied self-harm slash strange, no one really knows, altercation, where there was a reportable death as well. Both of those occasions, they wouldn't have been saved if there was a surgeon on the table. So it's just one of those things. The next one down is motor vehicle trauma. Makes up about 10% for us. Strangely enough, though, this one's our big hitter. Okay, so we've actually had a legitimate save from a plane crash. We've also had a propeller strike. Like, who's going to plan for that when we're making these things? But this is what the GD life is. You know, we're driving around, working out which beans are the best. You know, do you go single origin Colombian or do we? Oh no, plane crash. We're off. Cool. Let's go. So that's the reality of what we do. Then the very last one is just other, just pure random stuff. We can't really put actually a name to it, but it's about 5%. That includes people slipping over, your grandma's hurting themselves or whatever else. The achievements of this, very early in the piece, I reached out to Griffith University and I said, you know, this is brand new curriculum that no one's ever done before, especially in Australia. So we need to start collecting some data. Let's actually get some tangible evidence to why this is needed. The first thing we did was we ran a pilot study and we looked at how presenting information and giving our guys equipment on the road is going to affect them. And we've had this amazing result straight up. So police officers are now feeling prepared massively more than we ever assumed they would. So when we surveyed over 300 police, and we've got about another 300 surveys to go before we're fully done, but we're sitting at 39% was the natural feeling of preparedness. After doing Active Armed Defender and TFAT training combined, we shot up to 96%. So it's a huge thing that we've actually achieved there by giving our people that that sense of self. The next component of that was feeling of confidence, 61% or 61.5% up to 85%. So what it means is our guys are basically on the road, they're feeling like they can do the job and they're going to do it. How's that an ethical and moral win? Our guys are getting out there and they're doing the job and they're serving our communities better and they're willing to do it because they know they can look after themselves and the community better. So overall project benefits. What we're doing is we're out there, we're doing rapid interventions, okay? We're a proactive patrolling service, okay? Ambulance, they do a fantastic job of being in that reactive measure, which they can't do anything but. It just puts them slightly backwards. So us being there at the point of injury, we can apply rapid hemorrhage control, okay? We can apply airway techniques just to keep these people up and breathing. We're only using very basic skills. We're doing basic wound packing. We're doing tourniquet applications. But what we're doing is those basic skills really well. Okay, we're not trying to do advanced stuff poorly, which is not going to help anyone. It's the basics well. From that, what we're finding is that we're lessening the actual impact of trauma itself. So we're getting the people to definitive care better. They're having less shock. We've got them in a lot better physical and emotional state. They're not dying down and becoming vegetables basically after it due to mental health issues or concerns after it. And one of the biggest things as well is this guy here. We're decreasing financial burden. I've done some really quick preliminary studies on how much it costs to bleed. And what we're finding is that early intervention, it keeps the blood on the inside. One of the things that's really stuck to me really early on was Dan Pronk telling me straight up, the only thing that's going to replace blood is blood. And you can't do anything else about it, especially if you've got nothing. So let's keep it in the body and let's get these rapid interventions on. So let's do that. And then one of my favourite parts to it is operator sustainability. This is something that I'm pushing off and I'm trying to work really hard for. But what we're looking at is having our guys with the knowledge, having our guys with the tools and the equipment and the skills, we're walking away after critical incidences in a better condition. I personally, before having this knowledge and being able to actually provide this training, I've had people die on me. It's devastating. I felt the depression of it and it's hard to cope with. Since doing it though, when I have had that same thing occur, I can handle it better. I know what I did was as much as I could do, and we're walking away with it more positive. The other thing is as well, when we get a win that we wouldn't have won on, well, that just does everyone a massive world of favour. So our personnel are greatly, greatly winning out of it and coming back on square one. So for me, and the end point, this is the end point. So we must fulfil our ethical and moral obligations to our communities. To me, our communities are simply the people that we serve every day. It's the general public, but it's also the dude that stands beside me in the same blue shirt. It's my community when I go home. It's my family. If we can't do this and we can't do this properly, if we can't go home safe and also with our sanity, we're no pretty well good to anyone. So that's basically what we're looking at. It's a massive win for the QPS. It's a massive win for our community. Very last part, and I've only got about 2-3 minutes left. This project has basically saved 24 people's lives, 15 physically, and we've also got those really good moral saves as well. None of this project would have been possible without a good couple of people in it. So Tim McCready's, Matty Pepper, and Dave Healy. Those boys are just an absolute wealth of knowledge, and we wouldn't have had it from here. From there, we've got Adam Cantrix, Jeremy Holder, and Associate Professor Darrell Wall. Again, medical guys, great knowledge, always pushed it out, and always at the drop of a hat, pick up the phone to answer my questions. And the last one is Benny Davron. So, big fella down the front. He's been in the position, started it off. He was on tack first day before anyone else was, and all these guys are responsible. All responsible for those 24 saves. So it's a massive kudos to them. The QPS are winning and all the other states jump on board and we're always willing to help out. So thanks very much. Yeah, it's actually great. We've had some good questions come through via ANSPAR as well, so Australian Police or Australian New Zealand as well. They're coming down and they're starting to ask about what we're doing, the results of what we're achieving. The big one is cost as well. So this is why the Griffith University research that we're doing on the side is so important, because we're actually going to put a definitive figure on the cost of trauma and the cost of bleeding. So when we can start to offset those things as to how much, you know, 5,000 TFACs cost, we can get that win straight away. So that sort of financial submission is what's really getting the interest across the board. So, yeah, a lot of states jumping on board. We've got Tadpole, Victoria and Western Australia all reaching out to us at the moment.
Everybody up to speed, and then 2 years, 5 years, 7 years down. They haven't done it for many years. What is your plan for moving forward? People have been to the training once. Are they recycling? Are you moving with different programs? Do you have funding for that?
So what we're doing is the TAC First Aid project is actually a completely indented curriculum into our police training now. So everyone from the recruits before they even leave the academy to the commissioner himself, they all do the training. And being an indented training cell now, it's all part of our annual upgrades. So every single year, every police officer from recruit to commissioner will do the upskill and training. They will do tourniquets again, they will do wound packing again, they will do every component that they need to become qualified in the usage of it.
Save the other questions for another time.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks very much.
I think you'd have to agree, from an Australian perspective at least anyway, I'd call that a bit of a revolution in domestic policing. You know, incorporating those combat behaviours, learning to treat yourself and treat others, your peers, and then staying in the fight is just amazing. And that, you know, give Adam Kantrick another plug, use of force, transitioning to use of care. That's a more... There was an interesting ethical question, though, that he raised in that, and that is medical personnel in Australia carrying weapon systems, whether they be lethal or non-lethal. Not going to try and create any debate here, but it is an interesting question. When you think about other services, we've had some presentations already where there are people embedded in. They might be first responders or other medical people moving with operators, but it is an interesting ethical decision or question. And again, it's also an excellent example and the utility and benefits of this conference. You know, the ATMAR guys have already had a plug, and the cross-pollination of TP, tactics, procedures, information sharing, doctrine, and getting all in the aim of getting better clinical outcomes. So stopping the killing, enabling the living. Well done, Dustin. That was great.